Imagine a world in which the All Blacks never beat the Springboks ever again. Well, it's not as far-fetched as you might think. Today, you are going to get a front-row seat to the panic coming out of New Zealand. I'll tell you what they're saying, and I'll reveal what I believe is the biggest reason we are ahead of them. And you know who also hopes we stay ahead of the Kiwis for a long time to come? Two-time Rugby World Cup champion Faf de Klerk. That's who. You can get your hands on a Faf bobblehead figurine for free if you visit the Scoin Shop and make a purchase. South Africa's leading gold coin and bullion retailer, specializing in Krugerrands, rare coins and numismatics. Just like the Springboks, the Scoin Shop is all about world-class quality and heritage. These coins are test match quality, worthy of back-to-back world champions. So why stop at Faf? Collect the whole gang and build your winning team. The Scoin Shop has stores nationwide. Right, so I'm going to start with John Kerwin. Back in the day, he was a speedy winger who scored tries for fun. These days, Kerwin is an outspoken pundit who has had a lot of not-so-nice things to say about us. But on this occasion, he has revealed a true sense of reality. Look at what he had to say. I don't think that we have the depth that we had before. When you talk about fullback, someone just doesn't come straight into my mind. Where we can go, we can try that. It's the same with first five. Remember, they call fly half first five eighth, or first five for short. The 60-year-old is revealing a massive concern for our oldest rivals. You know, I remember growing up in Cape Town and some of my friends were what we would come to call Cape Crusaders, local Capetonians who support the All Blacks. We would have heated debates, as you can imagine. But one thing that one of these pals of mine said around 1997-98 was that if an All Black got injured, there was someone better who could come off the bench to replace him. Now, that's obviously not necessarily 100% accurate, but the spirit of the sentiment was certainly true. I mean, Zinzan Brooke retired, and in came Tane Randall. Andrew Mertens was kept out of the side at times by the likes of Carlos Spencer and Tony Brown. Those are just two examples. They had the right formula in those days, didn't they? They got their best 150 or so players together and maneuvered them in such a way that they were all positioned inside one of their five Super 12 franchises. We, to be honest, were caught napping. And so in the first couple of years, we still sent the previous season's top four from the Currie Cup into the Super 12. And then when we did form franchises, it was a mess at first. Think of the Cats, for example. The Sharks were the only ones who really figured it out early on, and then obviously later the Bulls. But even then, we weren't quite doing it the way that they were doing it. They were ahead of us in terms of their thinking at the time. And they were ahead of us on the field too. Yeah, sure, we beat them here and there, but that 55-35 defeat in Auckland and 28-0 drubbing in Dunedin still hurt today. Fast forward to today, and we are the ones with depth in abundance, and they are the ones who are struggling. There's an important key to this too, which Kerwin does touch on, but I'm saving that for my final point in this episode. Before we get to that, let's look at tactics. Right now, it seems as if we have a plethora of attacking options. We can scrum you, we can maul you, we can kick in behind your defence from your own or our own halfway line, chase the ball ourselves, beat you to the ball and score. I had to get that in there, being a big Sasha Feinberg and Ngome Zulu fan and all. We can beat you in the air when it comes to the contestables. We can throw the ball around beautifully and creatively. But we can also win ugly when we need to keep it tight. We're also devastating from turnover ball. So much so that more than half of our rugby championship tries came from turnover ball. Yes, it appeared as if we were doing all the running at times, but it turns out when our opponents make mistakes, we capitalize. Properly. Our defense, while not quite as stingy as it used to be, is still very, very good in any event. And by the end of the rugby championship, it seemed like our line-out and breakdown issues had been ironed out too. all of a sudden, what exactly is this team of ours' weaknesses? I would say there are only two. One is a lack of concentration. Now, this is not true of every match, but our two defeats this season came about largely because of lapses in concentration. No doubt about it in Auckland, and I believe it was true in Johannesburg too. The second is a lack of cohesion. With all the rotating that Dr. Russie Erasmus does, there is an understandable bedding in period for new players, new combinations, gelling, etc. The latter is coming right quite quickly. We saw it all come together against the All Blacks in Wellington, and then again against Argentina in Durban. And in terms of the former, you could include hints of complacency there too. So as long as these players of ours stay focused and remain hungry, while not underestimating the opposition, there really could be no stopping us. However, we must also be aware that no team will win 100% of their matches. So we will lose here and there. And the danger is that we do what New Zealand did for so long. Win in between the World Cups, dominate even, only to fall at the tournament in a semi-final. We don't want that. But we have to accept it can happen. Our cricketers are a prime example. Maybe not right now, but there have been many times where we've won series and trophies in between World Cups. I'm talking about the 50-over World Cup now, just to be sure. And then we would arrive at the tournament as the favourites, or one of the favourites, only to lose. The difference for me is that our Springboks love pressure. It's as if they thrive on it. The higher you turn up the heat in the kitchen, the more they love it. And here's the big one for me that I promised I would come to for you. Picking overseas-based players. We've been doing it since 2018. New Zealand refused to do so. You need to remember that the Kiwis have around 27,000 registered senior male rugby players. That's across the country at all levels that are considered to be senior. So anything above age group level, right? South Africa, by comparison, has a fraction more than 113,000. Put another way, for every senior male rugby player the New Zealanders have, we have four. In theory, if everybody is doing everything correctly, then for every Ardi Savia that they produce, we could produce four Ardi Savias. How scary is that? However, that's not quite how it works, as you know. When you talk about world-class players, generational players, obviously, if they get one, we're not going to necessarily produce four of those. But I'm just trying to put it out there just to give you an idea of, theoretically, what is possible for us. And as I say, and we need to remember this, that it's not purely about the numbers, because if it was, then India and China would win all the medals at the Olympic Games. And while the Chinese are very strong at the Olympics, the Indians are nowhere. Population size doesn't equate to sporting success. It's very popular these days for people to say, oh, they've got 50 million people, why are they not doing better? Or, oh, they've only got 3 million people, look how well they're doing. And yes, there's merit in that. But it's not the be-all and end-all. Not when it comes to success, because success is not measured only by those things. Because if it did work that way, guys, then Bangladesh would be in the top 10 at the Olympic medals table. They have around 170 million people. That makes them eighth in the world by population size. And yet, are you ready for this? They don't have a single Olympic medal. They've never won a medal at the Olympic Games. Not one. Not even a bronze. Nothing. Nux. Inkanda. The reality is that many of our players are plying their trades overseas, and many have qualified to play for their new countries. Think Duan Fundamava with Scotland. By the way, I'm happy for guys like Duan. Do you really think he would have made the Springbok side ahead of Makazole Mapimpi, Cheslin Kolbe, or Kirtley Arendse? I don't. Maybe he would have got a chance, you know. Maybe Mapimpi, Arendse, Kolbe, there could be an injury, and then he would have come in for a couple of games. But he wouldn't have had the successful career that he has had with Scotland and, indeed, the British and Irish Lions. So good for him, I say. Remember, it's a professional sport. It's like working for a company. Let's say you're a computer engineer. Well, maybe you can't get a job at Microsoft, but it turns out Apple is hiring. So you apply at Apple, right? obviously professional sport is a little different because we're dealing with local and national teams. So there's loyalty, nationality, patriotism, pride, passion, and even tribalism at play. And indeed, at stake. But the key is that we decided years ago guys could go play overseas if they liked and still be eligible for the Springboks. The beauty of this system is that our players can go earn pounds, euros and yen. Sorry, could not and still cannot really compete with that. So it's great for the players to maximize their earnings. Don't forget, despite what some people like to say, rugby players, in comparison to cricketers and football players and the American sports, earn peanuts. They really do. Just to give you an idea, in many cases, what a football player, think Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, those kind of things, right? What a football player earns in a week, there are a lot of rugby players that don't even earn that in a month. And some of them in a year. And I'm not even making that up, guys. It's a fact. But it's also meant that Saru, with the guys playing overseas, did not have to pay those salaries. So they go overseas, earn big money, and Saru basically get a free pass. We don't have to pay them because the French clubs, the English clubs, the Japanese clubs, etc., are paying them instead. Win-win, because now we have more money to plow into the development of our game at home. So you can see the benefits. Guys go overseas, they interact with other players from all over the world. There's an exchanging of ideas. And to be clear, that exchanging of ideas is something that takes place freely. If two players, let's say a Springbok and an All Black, are both playing for a French club, let's say Racing 92, the All Black and the Springbok speak freely about ideas when it comes to attack, defense, systems, strategies, recovery, all those sorts of things. And then don't forget they're being trained maybe by a Frenchman or a British person or an Australian or whatever the case may be. And so there's different things going on, different ideas. And those ideas, the good ones especially, make their way back to South Africa. Doc himself did something similar in that he spent time coaching in Ireland, gathering intelligence, as it were. And the Kiwis are not doing this. They hold stubbornly to their policy of selecting only New Zealand-based players because apparently it will weaken their domestic system. Newsflash, it won't. Look at us. They also have strong school systems and development programs, just like we do. And yes, the sport will always be under pressure from rugby league, soccer and others. In South Africa, it's probably mostly under pressure from football or soccer. Not really so much other things, but you know what you could say? That with all the player welfare awareness that's going on these days, there might be a lot of parents who don't want their boys playing rugby because of the potential repercussions. So that's something to bear in mind too. Having said that, there will always be an external threat, whether it's from another sport or medical reasons. But you cannot convince me that selecting overseas-based players will weaken New Zealand rugby. And it turns out even John Kirwan agrees. Here's what he said. This is where I think we need to look at the way we've been doing things in the last 15 or 20 years. Players playing overseas, all those things. They have incredible depth. He's talking about us here. I don't think New Zealand has that type of depth anymore. I think we've got some depth issues. When guys like Richie Mwanga go overseas and they go over for money, we're suffering like Australia is suffering. Will Skelton, having to go back to his French side, will weaken them because they don't have two others like him. And that's where I think South Africa has definitely got the jump on us at the moment. Yep, depth is not only what you have available to you at home, i.e. the number of players involved in Super Rugby, but it's also what you have available to you worldwide. I know some folks would still prefer that we didn't select overseas-based players, or that all our guys came home and played for our URC franchises. To that, I will say this. Lionel Messi plays his club football in the United States of America. Can you imagine if Argentina didn't pick him because he plays in the USA? Everybody would laugh. In a professional sport, the best players play where the best salaries are on offer. Just like Google pays better salaries than Yanni's computer shop. But what do you think? Do you agree the writing is on the wall for our friends down under and they better do something soon before it's too late? Or do you think they are right to stick to their policies and it will eventually yield dividends? Let me know in the comment section down below. And just before I go, guys, I'd like to encourage you to head on over to my Patreon page and sign up as one of my patrons. There are great benefits to be had. For example, you can win the brand new Eben Etzebet autobiography that came out just the other day. You can also win the new James Small biography that's coming out soon. You might be able to get quarterly Zoom calls with me where we discuss Springbok matches, tactics, players, history, etc. You might also be able to get me to write an ebook for you on your favorite Springbok rugby player. These are some of the benefits to be had if you sign up as one of my patrons to help me to be able to do this full time. I would also love to go to Australia in 2027 and cover the Rugby World Cup for you from down under on a daily basis. If you're keen to hop on board, I'd love you to join my dream team. The link is in the description area below, and it starts from as little as $5 per month. So that's about 85 Rand these days. Your support will be greatly appreciated, and I look forward to your company next time.